You can't just think, well, the material worked yesterday, so I'm just going to keep on going in this direction. You've actually got to figure out, is this going to land today with this audience? And if not, what have I got in my communication toolkit that's going to allow me to lift this audience, to have a positive interaction?
This is the Leadership Communication Show, a podcast to help people like you be the inspiring and influential leaders their people need. I'm Michael Paperno, and I'm a communication expert, teacher, and coach. My personal mission is to help good leaders be great leaders through the power of communication. I promise you'll learn something from each guest on this show that will help you along your personal leadership journey. Okay, on with the show. Today's conversation is with a fellow communication and leadership coach and trainer, Richard Newman. He's the founder of a company called UK Body Talk, and over the past 23 years, he and his team have trained over 120,000 business leaders around the world to improve their communication and leadership impact. He's also an author of the book, You Were Born to Speak, and his research on communication has been published in the Journal of Psychology. When Richard and I last spoke, he shared the topic of his upcoming book called Lift Your Impact, and I was intrigued to learn more. So I thought the best way to do so was to invite him on the show. So welcome to the show, Richard.
Thanks very much, Michael. I appreciate being on here. I'm looking forward to it.
Same here. So let's start by telling my listeners more about your background and your story, how you got to where you are. And if you don't mind, I'd love for you to tell them about how you lived in a Tibetan monastery in India for 6 months, because that's a great story.
Sure, great. Yeah, it's a good place to start. So I come from a background where, you know, today I teach communication, but I come from a background of not being very good at communicating. And I was very well aware of that at school, where friends of mine seemed to be getting on well with communicating with others. But I just lacked those skills, so much so that a friend of mine, when I was around 16 years old, gave me a book on body language. And she said, you really need to learn this stuff because you're not very good at it. And I think this will help you. And so, you know, I was always a shy kid. I am highly introverted to this day. And just over a year ago, I got diagnosed as being autistic. And I had no idea about that growing up. I wasn't really aware of it, but knew that there was some kind of challenge I had around communication. And so when I was 18 years old, the rest of my friends were going off to university, or maybe a few of them starting work, but mainly from my school, people went to university. And I decided to do something that hardly anybody from my school would ever do, which was to take a gap year, which I know would be much more popular, I think, these days. But I took a year out and I decided I'd go somewhere else. And so I found this placement where I could go and live in a Tibetan monastery. It was up in the foothills of the Himalayas, up in sort of northeast India. And I'd be living with Tibetan monks for 6 months, where I'd be teaching them how to speak English. And I thought, well, that sounds amazing. Like, I love the peace and the tranquility. I feel like I'm really doing something that's meaningful, that makes a difference. And I got there, and it wasn't until I arrived that I was suddenly struck by finding out they actually didn't speak any English. And I thought I was there to improve their English, and it turned out they didn't speak any.
Wow.
And so we had to figure out, well, how are we actually going to communicate? I mean, how do you even get started teaching someone your language when you don't have a common language between you? And so we sat down in their kitchen, and over a cup of Tibetan tea, which is not very nice. If people haven't tried it before, it's tea, butter, and salt. It's ghastly. Yeah, it's kind of strange. And so we're just sort of sitting there looking at each other. And I started to realize that through body language and voice, through my tone, I could start to connect with them. And then over the course of 6 months, I would then use body language and tone of voice to bring to life words, bring to life the English language. And they would do the same thing for me, where in their area, they were pretty proficient at speaking Tibetan, Hindi, and Nepali. And I chose to learn Nepali because it seemed to be the easiest language to pick up. And so I got to the point where by the end of that 6 months, I could speak Nepali better than I could speak French or German that I'd studied for 5 years at school. And so I was really impacted by this experience. I then came back to the UK. I studied acting for 3 years as a way of sort of learning more about presence and storytelling and all of those pieces. And then from there, it was really very much a hobby that I started. A funny story on this one. It's my hairdresser was hearing about all my background and what I was doing. And he said, If I give you a free haircut, will you take everything you seem to know about sort of acting and teaching and communication and teach my hairdressers something useful? I'll give you a free haircut. And I did. I did a 2-hour session. They really liked it. They kept on inviting me back. And they remained a client, a paying client for 16 years. And meanwhile, every time they were cutting people's hair who seemed to have some interest in communication, they were telling them, hey, we've got this guy who's training us. You should maybe work with him. And I got a whole range of clients coming from there. And it built out to, as you said in the introduction there, training 120,000 people, which was never something I planned to do, but it's been an amazing journey to be on.
What I love about your story, Richard, so much is that you've taken something that was, and I don't know if it still is, difficult for you. You know, the body language challenge that you had when you were younger and being an introvert and being on the autism spectrum. I mean, and you've turned all of that into a mission and a career, which is just impressive. So it was kind of happenstance that your hairdresser said to you, hey, you know, you could teach all of this stuff and you did it. When did you realize this was going to work for you as a career path?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have to say, I owe a lot to him. And I always say this to people when I share that story, that if you see anybody around you that you think has potential they don't know they have, it's such a gift to tell them that that potential is there, because he saw this in me and I had no idea. And in fact, longer version of the story, he said it to me. He said, I'll give you a free haircut. I left there thinking, I'm never going back to that hairdressing salon ever again, because that terrifies me. The idea of getting up and training these streetwise London teenagers how to communicate. I thought, no, I'm going to find another hairdresser. And it was about 5 weeks later, I thought, I could probably use another haircut. And I thought, he's probably forgotten. He won't even remember. He cuts hair for hundreds of people. And as soon as I sat in his chair again, he said, free haircut today. You're going to train them next week. And so I went to do it. And before that first session with them, I was terrified. And I went in and I did it. And like, it's about halfway through where I thought, they're actually liking this and I'm enjoying this. And to come to your question, when did I realize this was going to be it? It was the first time somebody called me up, where it was the head of an engineering company. And he said, I just had my hair cut today. And my hairdresser tells me that you're an amazing communication coach. Could you come and train these 30 engineers on my team? And so I went to train them, I think a couple of weeks later. And I did it about an hour, maybe it was a 2-hour session. I came out of there and I remember feeling complete euphoria. Mm-hmm. I thought, that is so amazing. I've just done something that I love, where the people who I was working with, they seemed to really appreciate what I was doing for them. And I got paid more for that 2-hour session than I would normally get paid for 40 hours of waiting tables, which is what I was doing as sort of an out of work jobbing actor. And I thought, this is it. This is where I want to go. And then I started to get up a website and started to make things move in that direction.
That euphoria word sticks with me as well, because I'm also introverted. My listeners know that. I've talked about that before, but I'm comfortable being the extrovert that I can be, or the facilitator and the presenter and the coach that I can be when I'm doing it for other people.
Yeah.
It's funny, because similar to your story, I'm a former actor. I tried to make it in New York City and I guess I wasn't good enough, or I didn't try hard enough, or whatever it was. But that's one of the reasons that I fell so in love with helping people be better leaders and better communicators and better presenters, because I had a paralyzing stage fright in the theater. But I loved the theater so much that I had to get over it. I had to figure out a way to deal with that anxiety, deal with that nervousness, and move past it so that I could perform. And I did. It took a long time, but I did. And I think that's one of those things that's kind of interesting with both you and me, is it's kind of like, and I think you hear this with a lot of celebrities and a lot of people that you hear are, you think would be the most extroverted people, but they're actually not. But it's not just work for me either. It's like a lifelong passion to help other people be better communicators, because I guess it comes a little bit naturally to folks like you and me. I don't know what it is, but one of the things that's most rewarding for me in doing what you and I both do, but for that I found deeply rewarding, is I'm usually helping someone who on paper you would consider is way more intelligent than me, way more accomplished than me, but they need what I have to offer because they don't have the sensitivity to those soft skills, or they don't see their blind spots. And what a gift it is that we have people out there who trust us enough to help them in that way. That's just a gift, yeah. in my opinion.
Well, I think, I mean, something that you said there really struck a chord with me, where you said that a lot of the motivation for you comes from serving the other person, like seeing their eyes light up, seeing how much empowerment they take from the coaching. And that's always what has driven me. It's the reason that I am still doing what I'm doing, you know, after two decades of doing it. And it also helps with that piece. And maybe this is useful if people are listening to this and they want to be better communicators. The piece that has always got me on stage or got me up in front of an audience when I didn't feel like doing it was thinking, I'm here to serve these people. It's not about me. And once I do that, I go from being self-conscious to being conscious of the audience and just I'm wanting to stay present with them, connect with them, reading them, understanding what is important for them at this moment. And so I get grounded in myself before I go into a room, before I go into an event. And then once I've done that work internally, I then need to be outward focused. And so that will to serve others, I think, is important in every walk of life, whether you're talking about communication or not. It allows you to drive through. Like I often say this to people in terms of storytelling, you'll sometimes see somebody who looks like they are in a difficult position, they are weak, they're worn down, and you know, the bad guy comes in their direction and says, you know, I'm going to take down your family, and suddenly they get this strength, this power, because they're there to serve others, not just thinking about themselves. And I think that's so true for anything that we want to do. If we set a goal for ourselves, then we can let ourselves down and we go, well, it's okay, I'll do it tomorrow. And that seems to be like an easy way out. But when you have that accountability of thinking, no, I'm not doing it for me, I'm doing it for these people that I am committed to serve, then it allows you to keep going, doing things like running a business through the last few years has been very challenging for anybody out there, entrepreneurs, freelancers, mm-hmm. and people running bigger businesses, CEOs will know this. It's been very challenging. But, you know, the way that I found my way through that was thinking, I have a family to look after. I have a work family to look after. And I have clients to look after. And I'm going to get up every day and stay utterly dedicated to getting my mindset in the right place so I can get out there and protect them and provide for them in any way possible. And, you know, I think that's been so powerful, definitely these last couple of years.
Absolutely. And that's something that I teach a lot. And it's, you know, we all know it, but we often need the reminder that every piece of communication we craft it, or we write our speeches, or we even craft an email for what we need or what we want in that exchange, or what we want to share, or what we know. But really, that's, you got to flip it. It's the opposite. It's about it's about them. It's about the audience, yeah. what you need how you need to show up, and what you need to do for them to make them understand, or to make them feel yeah. it, to remember the story. And when you flip that in your day, and I challenge people in your day-to-day communication, you know, you write that email, take a step back, reread it, and say, okay, how can I set that person who's on the other end of this communication up for success? How can I make it more about us, not just me? And that really makes a big difference. Really makes it.
Yeah,
difference.
I love that. I love that way of approaching communication, because you'll often get people who think, well, you know, I went in the meeting and I said the things that made sense to me, and it didn't make sense to them. So there must be something wrong with them. Like, why didn't they pick up on it? Whereas, you know, good communication is actually about thinking, what does my audience need to hear? What are the points they need to hear? And what's the order they need to hear it in, such that it will make sense to them, it'll be valuable for them, it'll be inspirational or motivational for them, and always approaching communication with the other person's mindset in mind.
And keeping in mind that there's a lot of room for failure in a communication that you didn't intend. So, I mean, everybody's got their own filters and experiences and everything. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy with teams is, you know, you hear a leader say, well, I told everybody that, or I've said it. Well, you know, maybe you weren't as clear as you think you were, or maybe they weren't in the receptive mindset to receive it and to really listen to it or understand it in that moment. So it's not just a one and done thing with communication. I think in the corporate world, especially here in the United States, I know you're in the UK, but the culture here is, you know, you document it, you put it in email, and it's been said, and everybody should know it. But that's not how we operate as human beings.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen this with live events as well, where, I mean, certainly back in 2019 and before that, pre-pandemic, I'd be out on the road, my team would be out on the road teaching people, where I think back then we were getting like maybe 1,000 to 1,500 bookings a year. These days we're getting 2,000 bookings a year because we're doing more virtual stuff. But I would see this, I'd sense it much more with a live audience, where I could be with an audience, say I was booked 5 days that week. I typically deliver about 150 days a year. And I could do Monday through Thursday, be delivering the same material, get amazing reactions. People are loving it. They're inspired. They mm-hmm. they understand it. They're making changes. And then I get to the Friday, I'm delivering the same material, but it's to a different group of people. And I know that this stuff has got decades worth of experience behind it. I know the material works. And I get a totally deadpan reaction, people just not understanding it. Mm. And this is the way I describe it, is to say, as a communicator, you need to think that you're a surfer on the ocean. So you can prepare your surfing skills as much as you want when you're on the beach and you learn how to pop up and what you're supposed to do to ride the wave. But then in the end, you actually have to get out on the ocean and see what the ocean is like today. The ocean could be still. The ocean could be choppy. You don't know what you're going to get until you start riding it. And that's where your surfing skills need to kick in. And with communication, that's where your communication skills need to kick in. You can't just think, well, the material worked yesterday, so I'm just going to keep on going in this direction. You've actually got to figure out, is this going to land today with this audience? And mm-hmm. if not, what have I got in my communication toolkit that's going to allow me to lift this audience, to have a positive interaction?
I hate when you, I know that feeling exactly when, you know, you know this is a good workshop or it's a good program and it's just not landing. Oh man. And the worst thing that that a communicator can do is to keep going in that direction if it's not working, because it's painful for everybody. But that's hard to do. I mean, that you need practice. You need to have those experiences and go through them and see what works and what doesn't. And exactly like you said, what else in my toolkit's going to work with this audience today? Because this isn't working and I have to make a change in real time. I love that analogy of being out on the water surfing, because that's good. The conditions could be completely different on a Friday than they were on a Thursday when everybody's into it and loving it, you know? So definitely. Well, so you talked about mindset a little bit before, and you know, we're talking about how, you know, we show up. You have a similar philosophy to me, it sounds like, where, you know, we're serving others in what we're doing, and we show up to make it for them. And I know your upcoming book, Lift Your Impact, is about elevating people and communications. And give us an overview of what to expect when that book comes out.
The motivation behind this book was that for decades of teaching communication, people would come to me saying they really want to have a better impact on people around them. So if it was a person speaking at a conference, or maybe somebody who's pitching to a client, or speaking one-to-one with their manager, they want to have a better impact on the people around them. So we focused on that communication level. Then the last few years, the need shifted, where people said, before I even show up in the room, I really need to work on myself. And we've noticed this. We did a survey recently of a couple of thousand people to find out how are people feeling now compared to pre-pandemic. And confidence levels have gone down. We found that there's one study actually that's been done that says agreeability and ability to get on with others has gone down as well. And people's general confidence around themselves has shot downwards. And so many people have been coming to us. I think it's the most frequent workshop that I've been working on is around mindset, to help people get to the place where they can be the best version of themselves. They can feel good in themselves. They can feel like they are thriving and ready to start the day, or ready to go to that important meeting or interview. And so this is where I wanted to write this book, where it's broken up into these three major parts of, firstly, lifting your mindset. And this is something that I had to do as a business leader, as a business owner. I was having to do this early on in the pandemic, where we're facing all kind of challenges, where just, you know, imagine this, you'll know this and understand this, where it's a live events business that I'm running, where we're running events all over the world, most of which require us getting on an aeroplane. And then suddenly we're shut down, flights are not allowed to happen, you're not allowed to be in a room with people. And then we had, you know, a situation of a legal challenge where people outside of the business were trying to get into our database and steal our clients. Like, all of this was happening simultaneously. And people were coming to me saying, Richard, how long is it before our business goes bankrupt? Like, be honest with us. How long is it before we have to go and look for another job? And I was looking at this thinking, okay, the only way through this is I have to get rock solid in my mindset. I need to work on my mindset, then start to work on the mindset of my team, then work with the mindset of our clients, so that all of us thrive through this, because there is the potential for an implosion happening here. And so I would get up really early, I think like 5:30 each morning, which is early for me, generally speaking, or depending on which time zone I'm in. And I'd work on my mindset. I'd do meditation. I would be doing some kind of movement, some kind of exercise, where I'd be visualizing that day, visualizing that week, visualizing the next couple of months of where I'd love for us all to be by the end of that space, so that I was rock solid before I got on the phone or did an email with any of my clients, any of my team, and then started to work on the mindset of our team of how are we going to work together, how are we going to rebuild who we are and what we do each day in order to show up and be the best version of ourselves, what's needed now. And so I was very keen to concentrate on that in the first section of this book, where to sort of, you know, finish off that story, despite the challenges we had. 2019 was an amazing year for us. 2020 actually ended up financially being an even better year for us, as did 2021. We managed to get through that without suffering the consequences that I saw lots of other people doing. And for me, it started with the mindset piece. So I really wanted to share that with people, because I know that still so many people are struggling there. Then once you've looked after yourself, you've lifted yourself up, then the next piece within the book is, well, how do you lift others? How do you lift the impact that you're having on all the people around you, which could be your family, your friends, your community, your business, your suppliers, your team, lifting your impact as a leader within that. What do you do that's going to really make a difference around body language, storytelling, conflict resolution, the questions you ask, getting a deeper connection, as we were talking about earlier, with the people around you. And the final piece that I really wanted to look at too, because I've been thinking about it more for myself, and I see other people doing this. I've seen so many people, I'm sure that you have, Michael, as well. The last couple of years, people have really questioned, where are they in the world? Like, where are they in their lives? What is the point of what they're doing? We've had the mass resignation that went on, and people maybe like changing their job, changing their relationship, changing where they live, just questioning everything. And so I put the last section in this book around, you know, how do you really lift your future? How do you lift the legacy that you're going to leave through your life and through your career? What are the things that you can be doing there such that you have such a compelling vision of the future that you really believe in, that you care about so much, that you are compelled to put that into action, and you actually feel it's going to happen? Because I think there's a lot of personal development workshops around where people go and they sort of set a goal, and it feels so big and so hard and so challenging that they feel like they're never going to achieve it. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you mentioned earlier that you studied acting as well. When I was an actor, my goal, like I was studying in the late 90s. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon had just won an Oscar for their screenplay for Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my goal that I wrote down was, I am going to write an Oscar winning script that I will star in. And that's sort of where I see my career going as an actor. And like you said, it's a hard profession. And I was like trying all the time. I actually wrote, I'm trying to think, I think I wrote 2 movie scripts. I worked on them relentlessly for months. I was trying to get them out there and didn't seem to be making any progress towards this piece that I wanted to build. And so what I wanted to put into the book is a way of, well, how do you set dreams that you really care about and do the things that are going to work in order to get you there, which is something that I've learned in building this business over the last couple of decades, of figuring out what have been the pivotal things that have happened and what have been the pedestrian things that have happened that have allowed me to get to where I wanted to get to for myself and my team and my clients.
And we'll be right back. The Leadership Communication Show is brought to you by the Comvia Group, your source for leadership communication and workplace relationships coaching and training. Visit wearecomvia, that's wearecomvia.com to learn more. If you're a senior leader in healthcare who's thinking about making the transition to the early and mid-stage life sciences world, the Comvia Group's Write the Next Chapter of Your Career program is for you. Learn more and get access to a free preview at www.wearecomvia.com/next chapter. That's www.wearecomvia.com/next chapter. And now back to the show.
On that last point, there is so much out there, and it makes me sad sometimes. There's no quick fix to anything. And a lot of times what's being sold out there in a lot of the programs I see and leadership development programs I see and a lot of things, it's like, okay, this is going to be the magic fix. You know, you'll be a better leader. You'll be a better entrepreneur. You'll get to your 6-figure income or 7-figure and all that stuff that fills my LinkedIn message box every day and all of that. There's no quick fix. And what I love about what you're saying is you need to have that dream for the future or that plan for the future, but you also need to give yourself some wins along the way so you can feel that you're accomplishing on the road to whatever that big goal is, for sure. Because I think that happens a lot. A lot of people come to me because I do some career. I've changed careers 4 times, so I'm pretty good at it. And I know how to do it, and I know how to help people do it. And a lot of people come to me for that type of coaching, and they want to make the change next week or next month. They're so fed up. It's time. They want it to happen fast. But that's not how it happens. It takes, you know, it can take months. It can take years. But if you're being intentional, see, back to mindset, you know, and you're being clear, I love that you talk about visualization and all of that. Like, if you're really, that's not fluffy stuff. A lot of people think that's fluffy stuff, but it's not. If you can really figure out what you want, what your purpose, and you can see it and you want it bad enough, I really believe that if you're willing to be patient and willing to leverage your relationships and other people, you can get there. It's amazing how people will help you if you can be clear with them about what you need.
Do you know that reminds me of a quote that I heard. I forget the name of the person behind this. I'll have to try and find it. But I was at a conference last year where he said this. There's many speakers there, and he said, "You know what? You can't get $1 million team with a $2 why." And I thought that's so important in terms of, you know, getting support for people around us. Is that if people think that what you're doing is meaningless, worthless, or selfish, then they're very unlikely to support you. But if they really understand from you why it's meaningful for you, like what is the purpose behind this? You know, a lot of people really want to find someone who is doing something that matters, that's doing something that inspires them, and to help lift them even higher. And so if you do find a way to, you know, very carefully, passionately share your vision of a better future that matters to other people as well, like you say, you're going to find people who suddenly say, "Hey, I'll support you. Like, what do you need? I will give you everything I've got," and open up their hearts and their time to you in a way that you may not have imagined. Yeah, I absolutely believe that.
Do you have any tips for how people can start to define that future? And I don't want you to give away any of the too much of what's in your book, but I think a lot of people really struggle with, and it can be, you know, a leader, you know, you could be in a leadership role or you could be an entrepreneur or whatever, but finding that, I don't know, North Star maybe is the word, but really, really figuring out what direction you want to head in. Do you have any tips for getting started?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you use the term North Star. I talk about North Star in my book because I know that that's something that people can really relate to now. What I talk about is also how some people, and it's really sad when I see this, some people set goals and then they achieve them and they think, oh, is that it? I was expecting to feel differently. I'm not sure why I don't feel good about this. And if they question it, sometimes the goals that they've set are the goals that they think they were supposed to have achieved, because that's maybe what their family expected. That's what society expects. That's how they think social media represents success. Mm-hmm. And then they do it and they go, I don't feel good, but I guess I've got a nice selfie out of it. You know, that sort of thing. And so I'm really keen when I work with people on this. I love working with, I do this a lot with MBA students who, you know, they come into the MBA program thinking, I want to change the world. Like, I want to be a business leader of some sort. But sometimes they're not really sure where they want to go. They're trying to figure that bit out. Mm-hmm. And I say to them, before we go and figure out your North Star, there's really no point in putting that together unless you actually have an inner guiding compass. Like, we need to find your true North. What is that for you? And so I do a whole big piece on values for them, where I say to them, look, values, when you go into the business world, you'll often find them like chipped into granite above the fancy headquarters reception desk, but nobody actually really lives them. Or you see like a poster that says teamwork near the elevators, but nobody's really thinking about it. I said to them, what you've got to do is to really get connected with what is your true north? What is your inner guiding compass that's going to be with you every single day? And sometimes I say to people, look, an easy way to do that is I could say to you, would you like $1 million tomorrow? And they'll say, sure. And I'll say, would you like $1 million tomorrow if it meant that something bad would happen to a member of your family? Well, of course not. Would you like it if it meant damage to your health permanently? Well, of course not. And then you start to realize, well, there's certain values you have in life that are above the sort of day-to-day success principles that some people might say, you've got to strive for this, you've got to get more money, that sort of thing. There are principles that matter much more to you. And when you figure out what your inner guiding compass is, and I go through a whole exercise on this, people come out with it with like, I always aim to get 3 top values where you think, no matter what happens in my life, this is the kind of person I want to be. So just to give you an example on that, I have a specific one where my number one value used to be a good father. And I would always make decisions based on that, thinking, okay, I've been offered to do something that's very well paid in my business, but my child has a school play that day. I'm not taking a business thing. I care about being a good father above all things. So I'm going to make a decision based on that. But the being a good father is something you can't measure. It's not something where you have KPIs on it, and it means something different to every single person. Mm-hmm. And so I actually language it as being polar bears. That's my number one value, because I have a game that I play with my kids called Polar Bears, which is where when they were younger, I've got these two boys. One of them would go, I'd go on the carpet, I'd go down on all fours on the floor, and one of them would go underneath me, and one of them would go on my back, and we patrol around trying to get like food and find like a cave to shelter in, you know, mm-hmm. all pretend. And I was teaching them life skills and getting them to bond with each other, being very present with them. And it's everything I think about when I think about being a good father. And so it gets me really centered in who I want to be and the choices I want to make. And it then steers the kind of business that I want to build, the kind of work that I want to do, and what matters to me, how I'm going to measure success on my terms by the end of my life. And once you've done that, and you do that with ideally three values, you don't want to have 25, you'll never remember them. If you've got three values, then you know, okay, that's my true north. That's my inner guiding compass. So once I've got that set, now I can set my North Star vision of what I really want my life to be. And I can measure, does it actually stay true with what my inner compass is? Like, is it that I've always been striving for something where I think if I got there, it will cost me two of my top three values in order to get it? Well, if that's the case, then it's not your true North Star. You need to abandon it and go for something else. And so then you can paint up a vision where you think, not only does it sound really exciting and you think that is actually what I really want out of my life, but you're actually much more likely to achieve it because you have this inner motivation every single day to live out those values, because that is going to guide you in every single action.
I love that. I love that. So everybody, all right, you got to start doing the work on those three values. And what I really liked hearing you say, you know, you had that being a good father was a value. And then you said, well, you said used to be, and you refined it. And I think that's a really important point for people, and something that I talk to my clients about all the time, is just because you've defined what your purpose is or what your values are doesn't mean that they can't be refined, and doesn't mean that they can't change a little bit or shift a little bit. We're on this lifelong journey, and you're not the same person. I'm turning 50 this year. I'm not the same person I was when I was 27. Now, do I still value mainly the same things? Yeah, I mean, I'm still the Michael who values a lot of things, but the way I can define them for myself is different. I have a lot more experience, you know? So it's just interesting. A lot of people don't give themselves that grace. They feel like almost like what you referred to in being supposed to achieve something. Well, if I put that stake in the sand that I am living these three values, that doesn't mean they can't be refined. That doesn't mean they can't be changed. That doesn't mean you can't learn and grow and realize that a new value is more important now than it was 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that's key for people who might be wanting to avoid burnout as well, because sometimes we feel like there's an expectation on us from the people around us in our family or in our work for us to be a certain way, because that's the way that they've seen us before, and therefore they've sort of put us in that box, because it's easier for us to put people in a box and think, okay, that person's like this. And that can lead to them thinking, okay, well, I said that my values were this 15 years ago. I guess I better still act like those are the top most important ones. And in reality, we've probably got, you know, at least 20 each of these, but they can vary in their priority, and you can shift them around, and some could be more important. There could be a brand new one that comes in as you have more self-awareness or more sense of what the world is and what it means to you. And so this is something I also talk about in the book, of helping people find a greater sense of potential. So, for example, there are these personality profiling systems which are very valuable in themselves, of giving you a sense of self-awareness. But I'm sure you've come across some of these systems where you might have somebody who does a profile on you and says, okay, you're a red person, and that person over there is a green person. And it's good for self-awareness at first, of thinking, oh, okay, I'm behaving this way, and that's kind of interesting about how I make decisions and how I do things and how I communicate. But then I find that that's sort of level one, and very few people do level two. And level one is where you go, okay, I guess I'm a red person. That's how I always have to be. And you can find them feeling stuck and getting gradually worn down by the expectation of having to be a red person and never being anything else. And then, you know, maybe after 5 years of this, they think, I just have to leave this job. I am done with this job. I'm done with this relationship or whatever it may be. And they go somewhere else they can just be a green for a minute, mm-hmm. where nobody has expectations on them being a red. So I talk about this in terms of archetypes, which is what Carl Jung at the beginning of the 19th century popularized this term, where there's these universal archetypes of how people have behaved through stories, religions, and legends throughout the course of time. And we all have access to these ways of behaving, but sometimes we just get stuck in one particular rut where we think, if I behave like this, this seems to be helping me be successful. So I'm going to keep doing that. And we do it so long that we get stuck in such a rut that we think, this is who I am. And in fact, I've had that when I just when I'm coaching people on communication, and I've said, hey, what if you did some more gestures? They go, no, this is who I am. I'm the kind of person that never gestures. And I say, but you have arms and you can gesture if you wanted to, right? You can go out of that box. And the same goes with this overall archetype of how we behave. Where some people might think, I am the cold and hard decision maker, and that's who I am, and that's what everyone expects me to be. And then you find that person just burning out, thinking, I just wish one day I was allowed to be playful, but I guess I've built up my whole personality, my whole persona around being this way, so I can't change. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very much about helping people expand, find more of themselves. And like you say, you know, you might be in a different phase of life where you shift and change and you spend more of your time being something different. It's not that you're no longer yourself, it's just another aspect of you. And so I like being able to help people find more of themselves so that they feel better. And actually they're expanding their potential to do whatever they'd like to do.
I love that. Find more of themselves. Cause that's so true. We have, people that I help have so much more potential or power than they even realize. And they need help exercising that muscle that they may not have used, that they have, but they may not just use in their everyday. So,
yeah, there was this record producer I worked with once, and he was talking about wanting to improve his interactions with people day after day. And I noticed that he didn't gesture at all. I said, what is the reason for that? And I believe he said that he'd just been told he gestured too much, or he thought that it wasn't very professional. Mm. And so he said, well, let's just try it out. And so he started gesturing more. And by the end of the session, he was loving it. And he said, I think you've just given me my arms back. Like, I don't remember using them much for the last 20 years. And now I can use them. And I thought that's such a gift to be able to give somebody, just to allow them to explore a part of themselves that they maybe have closed down before, and then they go, oh, there is this other part of me over here. Maybe I can be more like this.
Yeah, and feel more like yourself. So that's powerful, definitely powerful stuff. So when's the book coming out? I know it's available for pre-order.
That's it. It's available for pre-order now, and it comes out officially, we expect, on May 2nd.
Okay, great. And who did you write this for? Is it appropriate for leaders of all levels, or did you have a specific type of leader or experience in mind?
Yeah, I think there's really two types of people that I wrote this book for. Firstly, I wrote it for people who are within a business where they want to live more purposefully. They want to make sure that they are having the kind of influence on impact on the people around them that they feel really proud of. And that starts with your mindset and then expands out within your behaviors so that you are able to leave that legacy within that bigger business where you think, okay, I feel like I'm really proud of who I am and how I lived and how I impacted people. It's also there for entrepreneurs because even though I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur, I just thought I had a hobby and it got bigger and there are people working with me, but I guess I am. And I do think entrepreneurially about things. But for people who think, okay, I would love to start a business, or maybe they're running their own business now and they want to elevate the impact that they can ultimately have on all the people they interact with, whatever the impact is that they want to make through their business or through their team, the way that they want to impact the people throughout their organization. I want to make sure that they're able to have that really positive impact and know that there's support there for them to get the mindset and the communication skills, the behaviors and the goal setting that's going to allow them to get that impact that they maybe started a business for and have lost track on and are wondering how they can get back to it. So, that's primarily where it's headed. And, there's extra benefit from this for everyone in their personal lives. But business has been my focus for this time. So I think that's where this will primarily find its footing.
Sounds terrific. I can't wait to get my hands on a digital copy or a physical copy. And we'll definitely put a link to where people can get the book in the show notes. But also, Richard, I really appreciate you coming on today. I am looking forward to the book. I really enjoy talking to you. And thanks for coming on the show and sharing some of your wisdom and experiences with my listeners. Tell folks how they can find out more about you and your company.
So the best place to go is if people go to ukbodytalk.com and you can find out more about the training that we do there. You can also go to LinkedIn. So on LinkedIn, I'm Richard Newman from Body Talk. We couldn't get UK Body Talk or Body Talk one word. It's Body Talk, two separate words. Richard Newman from Body Talk.
Got it.
And I post things on there, lots of resources. I'm also on Instagram quite a lot, sharing 60-second video tips, which is Richard Newman Speaks.
Terrific. Thanks again, Richard. I really enjoyed our conversation and I appreciate you coming on the show today.
You're really welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode of the Leadership Communication Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think this show can help other people you know, please tell them about it too. To learn more about me and my work, head over to my websites at michaelpiperno.com and wearecomvia.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all of the leadership communication tips and tricks I share on my blogs. See you next time.